Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome along to a special IMSA radio show that you could, in fairness, be listening to anywhere across the three substantive channels of Radio Show Limited. I'm John Hindhoff, and joining me to look at the 2021 IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship season are Shea Adam and Jeremy Shaw. Shea, our VP Racing Field Paddock Reporter, and Jeremy, who is normally alongside me for the races in our Hackney Global Broadcast Centre. Hello, both. Hello, Shea.
Hello, John. Hello, Jeremy.
And hello, Jeremy.
Hello, John. Hello, Shea.
Oh, that's good. I feel a bit like University Challenge on this, but I won't be asking questions quite so difficult. Jeremy, your starter for 10. How good is 49 entries for the Rolex at 24 at Daytona? We talked about this last year. We know it's difficult times, but that surely, once again, is something to celebrate along with all the teams, the sponsors, and indeed IMSA and their partners.
Pandemic? What pandemic?
Well, yes.
Excellent news. It really is good. And a lot of these, what's particularly gratifying, I think, is to see so many of the European teams coming over here, particularly in LMP2. I mean, that's doubled in size from 1 year ago. I think we had 38 cars last year, 49 this year. Should have been 50. We lost one due to COVID, and pretty remarkable, actually. We haven't lost more than that, I think. So, yeah, really exciting field, I think, for this weekend's race.
And when Jeremy says pandemic, what pandemic, he means in terms of its effect on the grid here. Quite an extraordinary turn of events to get that many cars on the grid. Shea Adam, we've already had some action, and it's been competitive action, unusually, because behind us now is the row before the 24, and in fact, we've now set a grid for the Rolex Daytona 24, something that we've not done before. The row was moved up, and we did a qualifying race, in point of fact.
Yes, and very familiar to fans of the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona. The final grid will not be set necessarily until Saturday morning of the race, because we do still have a practice session, or several in cases of this year, to go where things can go well or go wrong for certain people. And the grid will continue to change, but we know that in terms of who's quickest out there, we certainly have our players in front of us. And it was interesting at the Roar race, coming away with five classes, three of which had their fastest cars in the class not qualify on the pole position.
Because they didn't win the pole race, qualifying race, whatever you want to call it. Let's start with that, because Jeremy Shea's mentioned something there. Five classes. Now, there will be people who are going, what's Shea talking about there? There was four classes. There's two sets of prototypes and two sets of GTs. We know that. Except for 2021, there aren't, because we've added a third prototype class.
We have in LMP3, which last year in the United States had its own championship, the IMSA Prototype Challenge Series. This year, that series continues, but also, as you say, it's been included into the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship as well. These are the new, aimed at the new spec car, so with the slightly larger engine than was used previously in IPC. And it's attracted seven cars for the first race. Most of them should be in for the full season. And I think it's going to be a really good addition to the championship. I think at 24 hours, it's going to be a bit of a stretch for some of these cars, perhaps, because they're not really not really designed to do 24 hours, most likely, but it's a good, reliable package. Most, you know, these cars have been run in Europe in this spec for the past year. The latest generation of LMP3 cars were introduced last year in Europe for this year here in the US. So, you know, they should be just fine. And I think you look at the quality of the drivers in there, really, really good guys.
Yeah, we'll go through them in a moment. Shay, we have talked about this, and we have, through collective wisdom, been able to find at least a couple of twice round the clock races in which LMP3s, albeit not the current ones, have competed. Thunderhill certainly had a couple or three of them in down through the years. One of the original, or a few of the original, Ginetta LMP3s did the 24 hours at Silverstone as well, and there've been one or two other longer races where they've popped up. Seven entries split between Ligier and Duquesne. I was hoping that we were going to have a Dallara as well.
Yeah, but, you know, we can't be greedy with what we did get. And it is funny because there are certain teams that are running in the LMP3 category. And I know we'll get more specific in a few minutes' time. But Core Autosport, they've long been associated with the Orica. They ran that car to much success when PC, Prototype Challenge, was still the category back in the ALMS days. And then in the early days of the WeatherTech Championship, they ran it in the overall prototype class. Now they're in a Ligier, but their fire suits still say Orica because their fire suits are made by Orica. So there's a couple of funny little instances in that where we do have more manufacturer presence. Duquesne was very, very strong at the Roar, but the Ligier might just prove to be the stronger car over the course of the endurance race.
Yes, and it would have been interesting to have a Dallara in there because they'd have had a massive advantage because that's an LMP2 chassis. of course, I was getting ahead of myself. Well, Jeremy, let's start with Core Autosport then, as Shea has mentioned it. Jonathan Bennett is back. He never really retired. He was just looking, as he's told us on Midweek Motorsport and on IMSA Radio in the intervening time, he was looking for the right thing to come back to. And it would seem the addition of LMP3 to the big show was exactly what was needed to ring the bell or float the boat.
You know, he loves the prototype cars. He was never particularly... didn't feel particularly home in the GTD car that he ran a couple of years ago, and this is perfect for him. He's got a lot of experience in this sort of car, you know, in even in DPIs, but certainly before that in PC. You know, won championships, of course, with Colin Brown. So great to see him back again. Matt McMurray, who's joined him this weekend, you know, one of the young drivers who has had a lot of experience in all sorts of different cars now, and George Kurtz, who is a CrowdStrike. Has done a fair bit of racing in the SRO series. He's quite quick and certainly turned some very good lap times during the Raw weekend. So that's going to be a strong combination.
Yeah, so we've got Ligier, which is the bulk of the field. We've got the Duquesne DO8. We don't have the ADES 03 or the Ginetta, which is just getting more and more numbers and letters added on, G61-LT-P3. These cars run at a minimum weight of 930 kilograms with the big V8 engine. Right up John's street in terms of what he will like to drive. You've got to look at that team, Shea, straight away. And, you know, they've been running Works Porsches up until recently. That's a very, very good operation who know how to do 24-hour race. If anybody can get an LMP3 car to the end, it will, you know, it's likely to be someone like Core.
Completely agree. The interesting thing is when you look back through the history of Core, not necessarily the Porsche efforts, but their prototype effort, they've only once won the 24 hours of Daytona, and that was back in 2014 in the Prototype Challenge class. They've gotten cars on the podium, yes, many, many times ever since, and they did win a few years ago, as Colin actually pointed out to me last year when he won his third Rolex. They won the, I can't remember what the term for it was, but the non- factory classed effort in 2018. So they do know what they're doing in this race, even if the results necessarily don't show it historically. I completely agree, though. If an organization is going to get an LMP3 car to the end, Core Autosport has to be the favorite to accomplish that.
I'm going to bounce around the entry a little bit, Jeremy, because you mentioned the quality of drivers across the whole field. And no, it's absolutely true and prevalent here in LMP3. If we look at the Riley Motorsports, number 4, 74 entry, Spencer Pigot and Oliver Askew both in there with Gar Robinson and Scott Andrew. Gar and Oliver both in the under 30 age bracket. They're running a Ligier, everybody on Michelin tyres. Of course, you look at that again and say to yourself, well, you know, I'm three Americans and an Australian in that car. That's another quality driver lineup, that four.
Look, I don't think there's any weak lineups, quite frankly, but that is super strong. Yeah, with, you know, two Road to Indy champions in Spencer Pigot and Oliver Askew, and Scott Andrews, he's a former Formula Ford champion, had a lot of success in these P3 cars, won a couple of rounds of the IPC series last season. And Gar Robinson, you know, he's a champion in Trans Am in the past. He's had, you know, driven sports cars now for quite a few years. The LMP3 is a bit new to him. Yes, that's going to be a very strong lineup, particularly run by that team, Riley Motorsports. What's that? Oh, yeah, Riley Motorsports. I mean, Bill Riley and his group there. I mean, you know, fantastic. And furthermore, they're going to have two cars as well as part of that Riley Motorsports team. So it's that's going to be stout. The interesting thing to me is they didn't run the race on Sunday. So there's going to be a pretty steep learning curve when they come round to this weekend.
We should say there's plenty of free practice because there's no qualifying to do. So there are four sessions of free practice, including the long night session as well. As Jeremy points out, Shea, the 74 Riley Motorsports entry, one of its closest competition in every sense of the word, will be on the other side of the garage, where Jerome Blakemolen, Austin McCusker, and Dylan Murray, both under 30 as well, and Jim Cox are in the number 91 car, and that's in that fabulous colour scheme, the Motul colours, the Winds and Motul colours.
This is another really fun lineup, just looking at the names. So Jim Cox won the Michelin Pilot Challenge race last year alongside Dylan Murray, his full season compatriot. They finished third in the championship. Jim's driving has come on leaps and bounds over the course of the last two seasons to where the car that they were in, which was a GT4 Mercedes, was frequently competitive throughout the entirety of the race. There wasn't really an obvious weakness in the car. They were joined by Jerome at the Daytona round, which they won. They came off of that race having won the Encore Court the November previous. Now they're joined by Austin McCusker. All right, it's a prototype. That's going to be different for Jim Cox to try and get used to, and for that matter, for Dylan Murray as well. They both have select prototype challenge starts in the IMSA series, but bolstered by Austin McCusker, who won the LMP3 championship in 2019, was second the year before that. You put Jerome Blakemolen in any car, it's going to go quickly. The 91 will be the biggest thorn in the side for the 74, and I can't wait to see the two Riley Ligiers duking it out with one another.
Yeah, you never slow a car down when Jerome Blakemolen is added to the squad. If we're talking about teams that know which way is up in IMSA competition, Jeremy, then you've got to add to what is actually quite a long list, because there's an awful lot of very good teams in the paddock. Well, Performance Tech Motorsports have got to be right up there. They've been in a number of the different categories, and the 38 car has Cameron Castles, the Canadian, Rasmus Lind, the young Swedish driver, and a couple of drivers that you might be able to tell me a bit more about. Mateo La Rena from Guatemala and Ayrton Ori, a young American driver.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, you look at that driver lineup, and Lorena, Ori and Lind, you add up their ages and they still don't reach Cameron Castles. Cameron's only 51. So quite remarkable. Yeah, the youngest driver in the field is Ayrton Ori. He's done some USF 2000. And some F1600 before that, the last couple of years, just 16 years of age. Lorena, similarly, has done a little bit of F4 in the Mid-Americas, let's say, series. Not much more than that. He did some Super Cup races in Europe, the youngest ever to drive in that championship. So, you know, he's got some racing experience, of course. And Rasmus Lind, I mean, he's potentially a star. He's finished second in both the USF 2000 Championship and the next step up, Indy Pro 2000, both times to Kyle Kirkwood. But he's just 19 years of age from Sweden, a very, very talented young man.
Interesting to me, Jeremy, to see that getting on for, in fact, pretty much half the drivers in this field are under 30. There are some real up-and-coming drivers in this field, many of which we've mentioned. What's the attraction for young drivers to come in sports cars so early in their career now?
Opportunity. There's a lot of opportunities in sports car racing. There's a lot more rides available than there are in the top levels of the open wheel ranks. And it's now more and more becoming a real, a career option for these drivers, or even a career preference for young drivers. Really, really cool to see.
Yes, and with the news earlier in Rolex Week that Acura will be joining the ranks of the LMDH manufacturers alongside Porsche and Audi, who've already declared that they will be in from 2023, those opportunities that Jeremy's talking about might be opening up even further. Let's talk about the final Ligier chassis. It's the number 33. I think the only team that don't have an under 30 driver there. Wayne Boyd, who we've seen plenty of in the UK, silver driver. Lance Wilsey, bronze from the US. Yann Clairet from France. And João Barbosa. There's another man who, when you put him in behind the wheel of a car, João, seldom makes a car go slower. And that's a very experienced driver there to guide Sean Creech Motorsport in that lovely Stars and Stripes number 33
share. Yeah, for sure. And João, with his three Rolex wins, knows how to bring a team into a place where they can be competitive. Unfortunately for Sean Creech Motorsport, they had a fuel pickup issue that necessitated them retiring during the Roar qualifying competitive session. So they weren't actually able to finish the race. And that did occur when they were in the lead. Mm. So they are a very strong duo, Lance Wilsey and João Barbosa. Lance, who's got a lot of experience running in the IMSA Prototype Challenge category, second in the Bronze Cup in 2019. And he does have 8 Grand Am and 4 WeatherTech starts to his name, all of which came at Daytona. So they have to be looking at Daytona as perhaps their strongest opportunity of the season.
To Duquesne DO8, Jeremy, 47 Motorsports has the number 7 for Mark Varmé, Ryan Norman, Gabby Chavez and Charles Finelli. What do you reckon to their lineup and their chances?
Again, stout. Gabby Chavez, a former Indy Lights champion. He's raced in prototype cars very successfully and in Indy cars. Ryan Norman was a race winner in Indy Lights. Matt Kavami, he's been around here for quite a few years now, and he's a very, very sensible driver. Charles Finelli, as far as away, this might be his first sports car race. Certainly his first top level sports car race. But Charles, he's a tremendous character, yeah. and he has fun out there, and he's been doing now Indy Pro 2000, what used to be called Pro Mazda or Star Mazda before that, for quite a few years. So lots of experience in racing cars. As I can say, his first top-level sports car race. But again, another strong team, 47 Motorsports. They've been running these Normas. I think this is an updated car.
Correct.
From the past for the last couple of years. So, they should be, it might be their first 24-hour race, but they should be strong.
Final car is another Duquesne, as they are now known, chassis. This for the Milner Motorsports America team, the number 6. And at the moment, only 3 drivers named against that car. That could be a problem. They have to have 4 drivers in this category. Kenton Cook was added over the Raw weekend to Lawrence Herr and Moritz Kranz, who did a pretty good job in the qualifying for the qualifying. He just won the LMP race, the IPC race, and then put in the fastest time. I really hope they get the 4th driver in this year, because this is a good entry, another good entry.
Yeah, very strong debut announcement, almost sort of thing. You think about the Roar weekend for the Milner Motorsports Duquesne. Moritz Kranz, who ran in the Michelin Le Mans Cup in 2020 with this car, with the team, finished 9th. So they're okay as far as experience goes, and knowing that they're okay with their package. But then adding Lawrence Horror to the package is just even stronger. 2019 Michelin Le Mans Cup LMP3 champion, who actually was given the opportunity in the World Endurance Championship last year twice to start with two different Porsche teams. He's somebody that people are watching for an up-and-coming star. But this team, the one thing that does worry me is perhaps a little bit of a lack of reading the rule book. That has struck Milner in the past when they run at Daytona. So I really hope that they can find someone strong to bolster their team, because that Duquesne looks very much untouchable so far.
Yeah, it was very quick intake. So hopefully 9 cars in that category over the weekend. Jeremy?
7, John.
Excuse me.
Seven cars. And you know, you talked about that, the Norma and Duquesne. For me, if it's a Norma, it's a Norma. If it's a Duquesne, it's a Duquesne. I think the number six car for Milner, that is a proper Duquesne. So it's going, like, going back to Datsun and Nissan. I mean, if back in the day when, you know, Datsun, it was a Datsun. It didn't then become a Nissan when the company changed its name. No, it's not in my book. It didn't.
No, it's a Datsun 510 is not a Nissan 510, is it?
Exactly.
No, no, exactly
right.
Exactly. But is that? But is the 47 Motorsport then? Is that an older chassis that's had the updates?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so.
And is that reason that it's been called a Duquesne?
That's just. I'm not sure whether that's the team or whether that's IMSA or whomever. But
somebody down through the years who has immeasurably more time and mental capacity than us will decide what chassis number, etc. That was. So that's the new class. Let's go to what we might call the traditional IMSA classes in recent years. And by far the biggest entry is in GT Daytona. We'll come back to the other prototype class. Actually, no, I'll tell you what. Let's stay with the prototype classes as we've started with them and go to LMP2, where there are 10 entries, which is where I was going with my previous thought. You mentioned, Jeremy, before, 10 entries, splendid. And again, IMSA have listened to the paddock. The paddock told them what they needed. And despite what happened eventually last year, there'd been some changes that got people interested in coming back with LMP2 cars. And Daytona, well, it's a draw. And it's bringing international teams over. And that's exactly how it should be. And with the interest in LMP2 chassis going forward into LMDH, there's a few, again, some very, very tidy drivers in this trying to get some, I think, get themselves noticed and get some experience of doing big American races in these types of cars.
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it? I mean, yeah, we got to four or four and a half teams, European teams, that are coming in for this weekend that aren't normally part of the IMSA WeatherTech Championship. By that I mean High Class Racing, Racing Team Netherlands, Settler Racing, and RWR Eurasia, and then the half being Dragon Speed that, you know, they race over here on a fairly regular basis, semi-regular basis in the past. Anyhow, so it's a super strong drivers lineup. Again, up all the way down this field.
Well, let's start with the car that heads the sheet, numerically at least. That's Tower Motorsport. There is a Dallara in this category. They're all running the Gibson engine. That's the spec for LMP2, of course. And of course, they're all on Michelin tyres here as well. John Ferrano, the Canadian driver. Gabriel Aubry and Tim Bure and Mathieu Vaxvier are the tricolour of France. Jeremy, who, I mean, that's two golds and a silver, and John's the bronze. I mean, you're not allowed to have more than one platinum driver. We'll come to that in a moment. But that, in terms of gold, silver and bronze, that is a stout lineup. One gold, two silvers.
Yeah, no, I mean, all of the driver lines are really, really strong, aren't they? I mean, some of these names might not be particularly familiar. John Ferrano has been around for a while. Gabriel Aubry, we've known in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship now for the last couple of years. He's super quick. Mathieu Vaxvier, you know, he's been driving these cars in Europe. And Tim Bure, Timothy Bure, he's done a season of racing here in the US in the past. He did what is now Indy Pro 2000 back in, I think it was 2016, and I was stout. He was quick. Since then, he's been back racing in Europe. He raced these cars last season. So, you know, it's, again, a very strong driver lineup.
Yeah, all of these people are in with a chance in the 24-hour race. Win Auto Sport with the British Matthew Bell, Matt Bell, Thomas Merrill, Tristan Nunez and Stephen Thomas, all from the US. This is the 11 car share.
Yeah, and to be honest, I am a big fan of this car, particularly when you consider Stephen Thomas's progress over the course of the last year. Basically went from never having driven a race car before he came into the IMSA Prototype Challenge in the LMP3, walked away with the bronze championship, got on the overall podium as far as those races were concerned. He has joined Win Auto Sports, teamed up with Tristan Nunez for the full season. Tristan, his first race away from Mazda in longer than I can even remember. British Matt Bell never makes a team weaker. He has one series win. That came at Petit Le Mans back in 2014. He knows how to get it done in endurance races. And then Thomas Merrill, who's long time been a driver coach, a kart champion. He's got a background in SCCA, Grand Am. You've got a very strong and fun group. And to be honest, my favorite press release came from Stephen Thomas after the weekend when Win Autosport said that they informed Mr. Thomas that he was leading his class for the first time ever during the race, to which he promptly dropped a word that we cannot repeat on air and then lost the lead, but said that it was the experience of just getting there and then having the team come over the radio to tell him something like that. He wants more of that.
Yeah, I love the look of this category. I really, really do. Let's jump to the number 18 car. That's the next one up. Dwight Merriman, Kyle Tilley, Ryan Dielle, and in some ways poster child for the prototype ladder of the ACO, coming up through the old prototype challenge when it was a single make series, and up through the PC categories in the ELMS and through in LMP2, Paul-Loup Chatan. Again, two golds, a silver and a bronze for Aera Motorsport, Jeremy.
Yeah, Ryan Dielle, good to see him back here.
Very good.
He missed out last season, pretty much. This will be his 50th start in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship this weekend for Ryan, and he is chomping at the bit and ready to go. There have been some changes in that team over the winter, but it's still Dwight Merriman and Kyle Tilley who will be leading that charge. And as you say, with Chatan joining in as well, you know, you cannot discount those guys.
Yeah, and a little bit, maybe, I don't know. I don't know where we're going with this one either. High Class Racing is one of the teams that Jeremy said is coming across from the European Series, with the two Danes, Anders Fjordback and Dennis Andersson. Robert Kubica is the platinum driver and the gold driver. Now, I'm really interested about this because this is another Orica, but it has to be 2.5 feet longer than the rest of the cars in the class, because one of its drivers is Ferdinand Zvonimir Maria Balthus, Keith Michael Otto, Antal Balham, Leonard von Habsburg Lothringen. Thank goodness we only have to call him Ferdinand Habsburg. Shea Adam, High Class Racing.
Or the heir to the House of Habsburg is Ferdinand.
Son of Karl von Habsburg, correct, yes.
Exactly. He is the only non-rookie in this car. He's twice before done the Rolex 24 Hours, finishing fifth in 2018. That was the race that got abbreviated quite... that was not the race that got abbreviated for race. I'm starting to all blend together now. But an interesting decision in terms of their driver's lineup, because Anders Fjordback and Dennis Andersson are the full season drivers with High Class Racing. They ran in 2020 with the ELMS in that series, 2021 for WEC. But their expert driver in that series will be none other than Jan Magnussen. Well, he's got a fair few laps around this place. I'm just curious as to why he was not selected to be their endurance specialist and Robert Kubica was. I can imagine it's because Robert Kubica is Robert Kubica. But he will be making his rookie start, his debut at the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona. Hard to imagine Kubica being a rookie at anything, isn't it?
I had a long chat with Robert Kubica many years ago now when he'd done the P1 test after the WEC final round in Bahrain a few years ago. He was sitting behind me on the first of the flights that we were taking out. Smashing guy, immensely talented. It's great to see him back in a prototype. I want to bring Jeremy in on this car, and particularly on Ferdinand Habsburg. Already done DTM, did a bit of FIA Formula 3 as well, and in Macau in 2017, trying to overtake for the lead. He went off at the final corner, ended up still being classified fourth. Another one of these young drivers, Jeremy, that we're seeing in sports car racing, there's no doubt in my mind that he's getting LMP2 experience and getting his name out there with a hope of jumping onto one of these manufacturer programs come 2023.
Yeah, I mean, he drives for, Audi now, doesn't he, in DTM Habsburg. So, he came up through Formula 3. I think probably no shortage of cash there to do whatever he wants to do in any case. But he's a very talented driver, as he has shown. So, he had a great experience when he was here, 3 years ago now, wasn't it? Goodness gracious, it's really that long ago when he made his debut at the Rolex 24. And I'm sure he's excited to be back again.
Racing Team Netherlands, always great to see them on the grid, Jeremy. It is the yellow and black, not an orange car, but yellow and black because it is the Jumbo supermarket brand, which belongs to Frits van Eert, who is the bronze driver there. He has an awesome history and reputation for helping out young Dutch drivers, including all the way up to Formula One, as he's done, of course, in the past. And Guido van der Garde, Trof van Uytert, and the French interloper, Charles Milesi, jumps into that. This is an interesting car. They were slightly delayed in getting their raw week started because the car was a wee bit delayed. But once they got the car on the track, they made some decent progress.
Stunning. I mean, absolutely stunning. But the car, as you say, the car was just arriving at the track, I think, when the first session started. And they got it out right at the end of that. And then second session, i.e. their first full session, Guido van der Garde set the fastest lap. So it took him no time at all to get up to speed. He's a very talented driver, is Guido. Job went out at last year. He made his debut at Sebring and was super fast there. And, very talented guy. Charles Milesi, a youngster who, again, has a big future ahead of him. And, as you say, Frits van Eert, he's given a lot of people great opportunities. And it's super to see that Dutch team here for the Rolex 24 this week.
Yeah, all the way up to, as we said, Max Verstappen. And there's a couple of other young Dutch drivers that if you see the Jumbo brand, that it's Frits who is helping them along. He thoroughly enjoys his racing. And yes, he's a gentleman driver, but generally speaking, he keeps the car on the track in the right direction. He's not going to be the quickest in that car by any stretch of the imagination, but he'll go out and he will enjoy himself. And seeing as he's writing the check, I don't see there's anything wrong with that at all. Let's move on to the number 47, which is why 47 Motorsport can't have this number. It's Cetilar Racing and an all-Italian lineup. Adam, what do you make of the Dallara, Roberto Lecourte, Antonio Fueco, Andrea Bellici, and the brilliantly named Giorgio Scherner Giotto? There's not a weak link there. Even Roberto Lecourte is the bronze driver. I've seen him race plenty of times in the past. This is another strong team.
It is, but four rookies coming into the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona, they're going to need to pay special attention to the rule book, make sure that all of them understand the protocols of racing in IMSA, because none of them has raced in IMSA. This is a big swing for the 47, but a very strong car. The Dallara was super fast at the Roar. We saw great speed out of it, particularly when Antonio Fueco was in the car toward the end of the race. He's somebody who is very much out to try and prove himself. He was a former development driver of the F1 Ferrari team, replaced by some kid, Mick Schumacher.
Yeah.
So he does have that chip on his shoulder, and I've seen many interviews with him before where he is trying to prove that Ferrari never should have let him go. He definitely showed his full hand at the Roar and put on some great racing between himself and Mikkel Jensen. I think this car, if they can stay out of trouble and pay attention to the rule book, they will be strong.
Yeah, car certainly has speed. It's nice to see the variety with Dallara Ligier and Orica represented in the chassis department. 51 car, Jeremy. RWR Eurasia, Cody Ware, and he's the WR, the Ware Racing of RWR. Sally Yolik, the Turkish driver who we've seen plenty of in Europe, mostly driving GTs, but not exclusively. Austin Dillon from the USA. Matthew Jaminet, the Porsche driver was supposed to be in that car. He's tested positive for COVID, as have now a number of people who've been in Dubai recently for a number of different sporting events, and that's why Tim Pappas and Black Swan aren't here as well. However, they've gone to the same source for his replacement. They've brought in another Porsche young driver, Sven Müller. And once again, Jeremy, you've got to say it. Yeah, I know that this is a European team coming over, but again, the pedalers look pretty good.
They do. I think this, you know, if there's a, you know, a weakest car, I think it might be this one.
Okay.
Which tells you all you need to know. I mean, all of these cars are strong. You know, as you say, Cody Ware's been driving these cars in the Asian Le Mans Series now for a couple of years. Austin Dillon doesn't have any experience in this sort of a car, but super successful in the NASCAR divisions. And, of course, a former winner of the Daytona 500. So, you know, that'll be useful to have. Sven Müller, that's an interesting choice to fill in for Matthew Jaminet. I mean, don't think Jaminet has any P2 experience. And as far as I know, not, does Sven Müller? Did he race in Europe last year? I don't think so.
No,
so odd choice, that.
Porsche and, drivers, Jeremy. Porsche drivers. That's all I'm saying.
But that's it. That's exactly where I was going with that. You know, it does that tell us something for the future? I think it probably does.
I think it's. I think we're in for a fascinating couple of years with drivers we're not expecting to see bouncing backwards and forwards. Sven Müller's done ADAC Formula Masters single seater, but since then he has been in Porsches in the Super Cup and the Carrera Cup. That's where he has attracted the attention of Porsche. He ran for Black Swan, of course, in the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, and Herbert Motorsport again has put the roof over his head and the engine behind him, so he kind of knows that bit, but he'll have a bit more downforce than he's used to. Absolutely no doubt. Let's move on to PR1 Matheson Motorsports. They're the next one up, Shea, 52. This is another Wins-sponsored car. Ben Keating doing double duty at the Rolex again. He's done that before. He's the bronze driver with Mikkel Jensen from Denmark, one of, I think, six Danish drivers in the field this year. Scott Huffaker, who didn't take part in the Raw, but was doing, making sure he was doing his university studies when we spoke to him in Michelin Post Race Tech. And a Frenchman with a bit of experience of everything, who is really enjoying his driving at the moment and has been in great form the last 3 or 4 years, Nicolas Lapierre.
In terms of teams and driver combinations, this has to be the favorite to come away with the win in the LMP2 category.
Okay.
They've won the LMP2 championship the last 2 years on the bounce with Matt McMurray and then last year with Patrick Kelly. This year, we don't yet have their full season driver lineup in the car because this is not a championship paying event for the LMP2 category. Remember, this is basically just a go for the watch and see what you can accomplish. Ben Keating put the car on... he set the fastest lap in LMP2. Then he and Mikkel Jensen put the car on pole for the Rolex for this year. Mikkel, who has 2 starts in the series, resulting in a first and a second. You've got Scott Huffaker, who definitely is one of the young up-and-coming talents. He has 3 starts in the WeatherTech Championship, 2 of them being wins, one at Road Atlanta and one at the Sebring 12-hour. Nicolas Lapierre, fast in anything you put him in, 4 times winner at the 24 Hours of Le Mans, 3 twice a winner in the LMP2 category in terms of championships. It is phenomenal when you look at this driver lineup and think, all right, their weakest link is a guy who won Daytona in 2015 and, oh yeah, twice set the fastest lap.
Nicolas Lapierre getting some P2, some more P2 experience. He's just been named with his countryman Mathieu Vaxivière as the Alpine drivers alongside it's André Nagrau, isn't it, for Alpine for their LMP1 WEC championship. Really interesting again. I mean, just quality right the way through this car, as Shea said, Jeremy.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, gosh, it's look, there are no weak cars here. It's absolutely fantastic what is in store for us in LMP2.
We're left with 81 and 82. That's the 2 Dragon Speed cars, Jeremy. Let's take both of them. We'll start with the 81. Rob Hordes, Garrett Grist, Rinus VK, another one of those Netherlands drivers that Frits van Aert has helped down the years, and Ben Hanley in that 81 car.
Yeah, and Dragon Speed, they've won this race in the past, as defending champions here, are planning to do the same again. Rob Hoders, he's been driving these cars now for a couple of years and is gaining in experience. A gentleman driver, but loves his racing. Garrett Grist, another Road to Indy graduate, as, of course, is Rinus VK, who is indeed still sponsored by Jumbo in the IndyCar ranks. And Ben Hanley, what a fantastic driver lineup. Absolutely superb. And it's the same in the 82 car as well. Devlin DeFrancesco has done a couple of these races in the past. He had three starts in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. He finished fifth here last time out. That was in a prototype car. So, he's already got experience here. The two Germans joining in, Christopher Mies and Fabian Schiller, neither of them has much P2 experience, if any. But Eric Lux has been around for a long time as well. And it's, again, you can't count out any of these cars.
No, absolutely. I'm really interested to see how the GT refugees, if you will, the factory drivers, Chris Meese and Fabian Schiller, both factory drivers of GT cars for major German manufacturers. Very interested to see how they go along. I'm not, again, going to ask you who wins that because... Just get out the dice. We'll leave the full pro lineups till the end. So the GT Le Mans and the Daytona Prototype International to the end. So we will now go to GT3, the GT Daytona, GTD category. It is the most numerous, 19 entries. You listen to a special programme. Shea Adam, Jeremy Shaw, me, John Hindhoff, looking at the entry for the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona and ahead to the rest of the the IMSA WSC, WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. The 19 cars are headed by the number one of Paul Miller Racing. I think there's 18 different manufacturers across the IMSA Championships this year in 2021, Jeremy. And I think a dozen of them, near enough to 10 or a dozen, are represented in the GTD category. And we start with Lamborghini and Paul Miller Racing. Brian Sellers and Madison Snow, we kind of expect those two in the car, and joined by Corey Lewis and Andrea Caldarelli.
Yeah, the same driver lineup that won this race last year. They won the Michelin Endurance Cup last season. Anything else? Don't really need to say much more than that, do we?
No, they know which way is up. Simple as. They have stiff competition. This is a thick field. It is deep. It is wide. It is long. That is every adjective you can think about. And we go to the next car in line, Pfaff Motorsports, with a Porsche 911. Zach Robichon, Lawrence Vanthuur, Lars Kern, the fastest man in a production car around the Nürburgring Nordschleife, and Matt Campbell, the Australian Porsche superstar. Shea Adam, Porsche specialists are plenty in this car.
Yeah, no kidding. There's no shortage of talent for Pfaff Motorsports. And I was actually on a Zoom call with them earlier this week, and they cited the Paul Miller car as their biggest competition. Mm-hmm. So it could be the first two cars in numerical order. But for Pfaff Motorsports, they're coming back for another year. Lars Kern, who was very humble on this call and actually said he doesn't consider himself a race car driver. He considers himself a production car specialist who occasionally gets to drive race cars. Joined by Matt Campbell and Lawrence Vanthuur. Well, right there, there are three guys that are basically factory Porsche. Zach Robichon stuck this car on pole a year ago, setting the fastest lap time in qualifying. We know the car is fast. All we need to worry about is reliability because the race car hasn't gotten that many miles under its belt in 2020. So we need to make sure that all of the rust is shaken out before the race begins.
Yeah, no mice nesting in that if it's been stuck away in a corner. Vasser Sullivan with two Lexus RCF GT3s, Jeremy. I mean, highlights right through here. The 12 car, Robert Magennis, Zach Veitch, Townsend Bell, Frankie Montecalvo, and in the other car, Aaron Tillets, Ollie Gavin, back as a platinum driver, of course, Kyle Kirkwood, and Jack Hawksworth. What do you make of those two lineups for Vasser Sullivan?
super strong, absolutely super strong. I mean, I haven't added up how many Road to Indy races that McGuinness, Veitch, Kirkwood and Hawksworth have got between them. Probably should do because it's a lot. They're really talented guys. Frankie Montecarvo has done a super job these last couple of years. He had a couple of pole positions last year. Zach Veitch, making a first move full time into sports cars, has raced in the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship once before, had a fourth place finish, all systems go. The other car there, number 14, Hawksworth and Tielitz, once again will be looking to finish off what they kind of started last season. They did have some success, and they won the Sprint Cup Championship for GTD, but it really should have been so much more. They were on track to win the overall championship until just everything that possibly could go wrong and more did so in the final two seasons. So all of a sudden they dropped off the radar screen, and it was really just bad luck and circumstances. It wasn't anything particular mistakes they necessarily made.
No.
And then Carl Kirkwood, he's a rising star of this sport, no question about it. 22-year-old from Jupiter in Florida. Oliver Gowan, I've heard that name rings a vague bell somewhere along the line.
Well, he stayed with... obviously, he decided he wanted to go back to a V8 engine in front of his feet. He's got all those boots that have been custom built so he doesn't burn through the soles in them. And when they put the engine behind him, he had no use for them. And he gets to stay in yellow. He must feel right at home there, Jeremy.
Brilliant, isn't it? Brilliant. And loving it. And adapted so quickly to the car last weekend. Was super fast, as expected, in the qualifying race. So, that's going to be hard to count out that team. No question about it.
Yeah, two very, very strong entries for Lexus RCF GT3 and Vassa Sullivan, 12 and 14. Next up, we go back to a Porsche, another Porsche for sure, to talk about. Already, they've written a story already. We're not even to the first green flag in terms of competition, race competition for the season. Wright Motorsports have had to take back or acquire back a car that they sold on to Tim Pappas about this time last year when he had a problem just before the Rolex 24. They had a really nasty incident when Ryan Hardwick was at the wheel after they'd qualified with the fastest time for the qualifying race. In night practice, Ryan Hardwick was coming in. He'd done his laps. There was a red flag out and inextricably, in some respects, caught his left wheels on a slippy line and the car speared into the wall. He was very apologetic about it, put his hands up straight away. The team worked really hard to get the requisite bits into the new shell and they did race. So they're in the race and then Ryan Hardwick will be joined by Patrick Long, Jan Heerlen and Klaus Backler. Again, great names there for Wright, and they want to do well.
And as I understand it, they actually took the old car back to the shop after the damage was sustained because that chassis was perfect. All four of the drivers loved it. They felt comfortable in it. They felt like it just had a little bit of extra magic. So even right now, as this preview is going out, they are trying to get that old chassis back. There's a little bit of complication because once you start a weekend, once you tech a car, that is the serial number that you have to run with. I don't know if that's still the case since we've had an official session for the Roar, i.e. qualifying has taken place.
Yeah,
I don't know if you can then swap chassis, but Wright Motorsport is trying to get that original brand new car back because all four of their drivers loved it so much. In terms of the drivers that they've brought to the field, you don't need to talk about Patrick Long or Klaus Backler, factory guys. You're fine there. Jan Heerlen is the one that interests me because he is so strong. He's a superstar, but Daytona has not been very kind to him in the last few years. And as a matter of fact, he's only twice stood on the podium at Daytona. So this is sort of a place where there's a bit of unfinished business for the Belgian driver who lives not too far away from the track. So I'm really hoping that perhaps this year can be a little bit kinder to him.
Jeremy, I'm interested to hear that they're trying to get the original chassis repaired and back. We spoke to Ryan in our Michelin Countdown to Green before the 100-minute race, and he was saying that there are regulations about which parts of the cars you've got to to transplant to keep your entry, and it's mostly about engine and gearbox. But he did say, I remember distinctly now, he said, and the handling package we put over. So clearly they feel there might be an advantage to getting that original car back and teched for the race.
Yeah, very good point. I mean, you know, it was a brand new car, the other one.
Correct.
And the car they ran, you know, as a result of that was the car they bought back from Black Swan, having sold it to them last year after they had their incident, as you say. So, you know, a new car, yeah, it's generally going to be quicker, generally going to be better than an old one. If it's sorted, this one clearly was. So we'll have to watch out on that. Yeah, after that crash, they had the, it was during the night practice, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes,
it was.
And they, right after qualifying, that's right. And they already had the engine and transmission out of that car before night practice was completed, realizing that, you know, the car wasn't going to be easily repaired. So, you know, they could probably do the same again and put it back into the original car. They'll probably have to start from the back. But, you know, as we saw with various other cars, that's really not much of a handicap, is it, for a 24-hour race?
No, indeed. And if they fail, that's the confidence level, they may well go for that. You're listening to the Rolex Daytona 24 and IMSA preview for 2021. Shea Adam, Jeremy Shaw and me, John Hainoff, we're in GTD. And we move now to another Lamborghini team, GRT Grasser Racing. They've got two entries. The number 19 is Misha Goikberg, well-known in IMSA circles. Frank Pereira, the Frenchman. Albert Costa, and Tim Zimmerman. And the 111 is the second car of the GRT Grasser Lamborghini team, with Haas, Rolf Ineisen, Mirko Bortolotti, Stijn Schothurst, and Marco Mappelli, a Swiss, Italian, and Dutch lineup there. Jeremy Shaw, GRT Grasser Racing team. They've got a bit of unfinished business at the Rolex.
Well, no. I mean, last year they were trying to make it three in a row.
Exactly.
They want to get back and make it three out of four, yeah. I guess. So, yeah, a winning pedigree, absolutely. Eight tremendous drivers. You know, the only one who doesn't have experience of this championship is Tim Zimmerman, who's done a fair bit of mainly Porsche driving, I think, in the Carrera Cup in Germany. Two more very, very strong cars.
Yeah.
Lamborghini, it always runs well here at the Daytona. And, you know, as we said, you know, they won the previous 2 years. Last year they didn't win, but another Lamborghini, the number one, was now running the colours, the number one number this weekend. They're running 48 for the rest of the season. But the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini won last year as well. So, you know, Lamborghini on a roll here at Daytona.
Yeah, Stijn Schothurst hasn't had a good experience of Daytona. A couple of crashes. In fact, he wrote off a car in the roar in 2020 and then crashed in the race, all on the infield. It looks fairly innocuous on the infield, but that kink in particular, where Stijn was having so much trouble, you really have to be committed and have a good handling car through there. Well, we've talked about Lamborghini, we've talked about Porsche and Lexus. Now, let's talk about Ferrari. Shea Adam, AF Corsa, have a 488 GT3 for some names that will be familiar, some perhaps not. Matteo Crossoni, the silver driver from Italy. Daniel Serra, the platinum driver from Brazil. And Niklas Nielsen from Denmark are teamed up with the Brit silver Simon Mann. What do you reckon? AF Corsa in the 21.
Well, in three of the sessions that we had, Ferrari was fastest. And in one of those, as a matter of fact, it was Daniel Serra. I believe that might have been the fastest time of the weekend for GTD as well for Serra. Yes, it was. So Daniel Serra, no stranger to going quickly at Daytona. He's been on pole in GTD before. Matteo Crossoni knows how to wheel a Ferrari around Daytona, although he doesn't have the results to back it up, but he has been super fast. Niklas Nielsen, the Ferrari factory driver after winning Ferrari Challenge in Europe and the European Le Mans Series in 2019. Simon Mann is very much the unknown quantity in that, and yet he won the Pro-Am Championship in Italian GT Sprint alongside Crossoni last year. If they come in with a very solid package where Mann feels comfortable in the car, they're going to be hard to beat.
It's a shame that we haven't got more Ferraris. I like to see Ferraris racing in endurance races. They are the single Ferrari that's in there. That might make life just a little more difficult. Sorry?
There's one more.
Oh, sorry. Yes, of course there are. There's two Ferraris in the race. So I'm a little less disappointed. Only one Aston Martin, though. And that's where...
Okay. Good try.
Who's got the second Aston? Oh, of course, TF, of course. That's why... sorry, Tom. You can beat me up later. Two Aston Martins and two Ferraris to go along with the other manufacturers that we've talked about so far. Heart of Racing team. Part of the Heart of Racing team are still in or off the coast of New Zealand because they've been there since the first lockdown. However, the driving talent that has been brought in has not really weakened that team at all. Ian James in service and Roman De Angelis, they're the two HORT, Heart of Racing team regulars, to be joined by two, I suppose we say, former Aston Martin Works drivers now, as there is no Aston Martin Works GT programme. Darren Turner and Ross Gunn. They got better and better with the Aston Martin last year, Jeremy, and they'll be looking for the Heart of Racing team. They'll be looking to build on that coming into 2021.
Yeah, very much so. Really strong towards the end of the year. A couple of podium finishes, including a second at the Sebring finale. So, yeah, coming into this new season with some momentum and looking to carry that forward. It was a pretty horrible experience for them 1 year ago, involved in a pretty heavy crash. But, you know, thinking avoid all the incidents, the car should be right there amongst the... in the thick of it at the end, I think.
And big fan favourites as well, those Aston Martins. It's a mark of the variety share in GT Daytona that we're getting on for halfway through the field, and we haven't mentioned either Mercedes or Audi. We'll put that right straight away with the next car on the entry list, the number 28, Allegra Motorsports AMG GT3 for Daniel Morad, Michael De Quesada, Billy Johnson and Maxi Book, another factory-supported driver over in the GT Daytona category.
Still boggles the mind to think Maxi Book has never raced at Daytona before, but of course he's always been focused on Bathurst, though, and that's always been the week after. So yes. He's never really had the opportunity in terms of racing. And of course, he used to be factory Bentley. There's never been a Bentley presence at Daytona, at least not in the last 30-odd years. But for this car, I love the organization. The drivers are just great people. They'll always text me back, which I very much appreciate. But there are two words in the English language that you never want to hear in a paddock: electrical gremlin. And that's what they've been dealing with as far as this car is concerned. So it's quite difficult for them. Michael De Quesada, Daniel Morad, full season program. But for Billy Johnson coming in as the endurance driver, it's a different a look for Billy. And they'll be relying on his experience. Daniel and Michael both got the win of the Rolex back in 2017, of course. But that was in a Porsche, and that was a very, very long time ago.
Oh, Jeremy, Maxi Book.
Yeah, no, he has actually raced once here before. He did the race a couple of years ago. It didn't end too well, but he'll be looking for a stronger run this time around.
DNF in 19. I thought I remember on the plane down to Bathurst.
Yeah, that was with Fabian Schiller, Dominic Bauman, and JC Perez.
Yes.
They got more than halfway through the race.
Yes.
So that's a good...
Yeah. All right. Well, he's got the other half to do now, so he has got some unfinished business. NTE Sport is the first Audi we're going to talk about, with Alan Metney, who has been Jeremy a stalwart of the Porsche Cup categories. That goes into a new iteration this year in IMSA, but doesn't start till later in the season. We'll have a preview for that closer to the time. Andrew Davis is back in an IMSA paddock. J.R. Hildebrand and Don Yount in that number 42 Audi R8 LMS.
Interesting. And again, another interesting lineup there. Yeah, Alan Metney has been fantastically quick the last few years. I mean, he was the originator of the iFly brand, a former member of the US parachuting team, indeed. He's super quick. He really is quick, and he takes it super seriously as well. Andrew Davis, well, we know how good he is. He's been around this sport a long, long time, had a lot of success. Hasn't won here at the Rolex 24. His best was a second. He knows how to get things done. Very talented guy. Don Yount, again, lots of experience here. This will be his sixth start in Rolex 24. Andrew Davis, by the way, has been here 18 times in the past. And great to see J.R. Hildebrand making his first Rolex 24 start. Super, super talented driver. And he is very enthusiastic about joining this team. It's a new team, NTE Sport. It's Juan Mata is the team principal there, along with Alan Metney. It's the ex-Hardpoint Audi from last year. The car is pretty well proven. And, these guys could be kind of dark horses.
Next up, similar shape, different manufacturer, Acura NSX GT3. The number 44 from Magnus with Archangel. John Potter, Andy Lally, Spencer Pumpelly, and Super Mario Farnbacher. Even if they don't win, they'll have a good time with that lineup. But that is a strong lineup against you.
Yeah, a very strong lineup. And especially when you consider Andy Lally coming back to Acura, he had very good success the last time he was racing in those cars for MSR a few years ago. Now, the difficulty for this team is that they haven't had that much track time with the car, and it is a very snug cockpit. So Mario Farnbacher and Andy Lally, both very much accustomed to driving it. Spencer Pumpelly, I believe, has experience driving it in GT America, or the SRO version of what used to be World Challenge. He did get some laps in it there. But John Potter is 6'1", and it is a very tight cockpit. And Andy Lally actually said not very long ago, the distance between your tailbone and the brake pedal is much shorter than that of the Lamborghini or the Audi, even the manufacturers that they ran before this. But Archangel Motorsports, busy weekend coming up. They too have a car in the Michelin Pilot Challenge race, so the crew might be a little bit tired jumping back and forth, but in terms of drivers, you can't ask for much better than Lally, Pumpelly and Farnbacher to bolster your lineup.
No, not at all. And the same could be said, I think Jeremy's just said 57 Rolex 24 starts between them there. The same can be said, Jeremy, in terms of drivers that can bolster your opportunity to stand in victory circle. For the number 57, Winward Racing, Mercedes-AMG GT3. Snazzy new colour scheme debuted at the Raw. Russell Ward, well, expect him in that car. Indy Donchi has been part of that programme for a little while. Philip Ellis, drafted in, has done a lot of work on the Nürburgring Nordschleife. And Maro Engel as well in that car. Wow.
Yeah, but talk about levels of experience. Say the previous car has 57 starts between them. This team has three, and they were all for Maro Engel, whose best place finish in this race was a seventh in class. So, to opposite ends of the experience scale, but speed scale, you're absolutely right, John. And, three silver drivers there, plus Maro's still a platinum, a little bit surprising. Mm. This team can get the job done. They've certainly got the driver lineup. They might not have the experience that would be optimal, but they've all raced here on the high banks before, so watch out for these guys.
64 is another Porsche. This is Team TGM stepping up into GT three. Oh, sorry, I've missed out the Scuderia Corsi. See, I was determined to only have one Ferrari. The 63 second Ferrari. I've got in my head now there's only one Ferrari in this, so this is going to be nightmare come cars on the track. Ed Jones, Brett Curtis, Ryan Briscoe and Marcus Gomes from Brazil for Scuderia Corsi this year, the number 63.
There's only one weak link on this team, that Brett Curtis, best finish at Daytona of 11th back in 2012. He's very much a gentleman driver. Does have two wins in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, though, so he does understand his role. And then handing over to drivers like Marcus Gomes, who very much is a fast Ferrari driver. Let me just see here. One, two sessions during the course of the role where he was fastest, not only in this car, but in GTD and an Asian Le Mans Series champion last year. Ed Jones, former IndyCar driver, Indy Lights champion back in 2016, most recently Audi, I believe, for DTM with WRT. At least that was supposed to be the plan for 2020. And then Ryan Briscoe, who comes away from Wayne Taylor Racing, coming in second in the overall championship last year, the Michelin Endurance Cup champion. He's long been a Ferrari Challenge coach, so he's been familiar with the 488 GT3 car, but not very much driving experience behind the wheel. And I asked him about that a little while ago, actually, and he said that very little translated over and was of help. But the pivotal thing was being the Ferrari Challenge coach let him get to know Giacomo Mattioli, which got him into Scuderia Corsa. And good. There's the story of how this car originated.
Always a story behind the scenes. The 64 Team TGM Porsche. This is Ted Giovannis Motorsport, Jeremy. And this is a real IMSA success story. We've seen them in the Pilot Challenge. They've been a champion team in previous iterations of that championship. Ted has always wanted to run the 24 Hours of Daytona. He's brought along with him Owen Trinkler and the brothers Plum for this. It is a step up. It is, you know, it's a hard thing to do for the team and for the drivers. But good luck to Ted for wanting to do it and for making it happen.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle. They're going to be running under the auspices of Wright Motorsports, or along with association with Wright Motorsports.
Smart.
Here. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, Joe Vardy is the team manager here generally for Team TGM, and he's been around this business, had a lot of success over the years. So, yeah, definitely a smart move to align themselves with Wright. So they know everything about these 911 GT3R Porsches tip to toe. So it's a good combination. I mean, for the drivers themselves, you know, they've three of the four, the two Plum brothers and Owen Trinkler, do have experience here at the Rolex 24, but not for quite a long time. So it's going to be a steep learning curve for those guys. But as you say, hats off to them for taking on this challenge.
Now, you remember, I said it was a good news story for IMSA. I think it's a good news story all round. Cast your mind back, dear listener, that Ted Giovannis stepped away with Team TGM from racing in 2020. And it was because of COVID. And the reason is that Ted and his companies work with very, very sophisticated mathematical modelling systems and all kind of algorithms. And they dedicated some time to helping the fight against COVID and putting together all kinds of information. The fact that he's back is good news for the championship. And doesn't that kind of mean it's better news and everybody is feeling a bit better about things? Well, maybe it does. And we wish them all the best. Another returnee, Shea Adam, to the IMSA paddock are the colours of Sun Energy One. And Kenny Habul, of course, with Raffaele Marciello, Michael Grenier and Lucas Stoltz, the German driver in the three-pointed star of AMG GT3, the number 75 Mercedes.
I just quadruple checked. Marciello is a rookie to the Rolex 24. Jeremy's got me second guessing everything now. But yeah, he's another one of those drivers who was in the F1 Ferrari Academy and unceremoniously let go. He's been a Blancpain GT champion since then in 2018, Mercedes factory for a few years now. Very fast driver, will not take him long to charge towards the front of the field. Lucas Stolz, same thing, very quick factory Mercedes, used to driving in the endurance races. In fact, he's an endurance champion in 2018. He's won the Bathurst 12-hour in the Pro-Am category. Michael Grenier, open wheel background. He has run at Daytona before with Kenny Habul, so he's familiar with the team and all the inner workings of all that. But Kenny, seventh in 2016, I believe that was his first Rolex, or at least it was one of his earliest ones, hasn't had the success since then. So Kenny will be looking for a fun race, but at the end of the day, he's a very competitive man and he won't be happy with anything less than a watch on his wrist.
Yeah, getting help from another team in the paddock to run that, but I'm not sure if that's been announced, so I'm going to keep that to
myself. I think it has.
Has it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I know about it, so it must have been. No, seriously.
Right. Well, that's gradient, isn't it? That are looking after that car and giving them some assistance, Andres and the rest of the guys. Another Porsche 911, Team Hardpoint there. Audi from last year is in the field. They've moved to 911 and to Porsche. Rob Ferriol, and this is a joint effort with EBM. The EB of EBM, the M is motorsport, the EB is Earl Bamber. He's the platinum driver. Has a bit of Porsche experience, of course. And great news here that Christina Nielsen, and even better news, the now recovered Catherine Legg, back on the entry list for Daytona. Another good news story here, Jeremy.
Very much so, yes. Super to see that team here. And you know, the conjecture and hope that Catherine and Christina will be doing a full season effort in a second car. That would be even better news. Mm. You know, both of them had success. Christina, you know, two-time champion, of course, in the IMSA World Tech Sports Car Championship. So, you know, super, super strong. Owen Hayes is going to be the engineer there. He's a former factory Porsche engineer as well, so you know, they have got everything they need to bring it home.
And he's worked with Earl before as well, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah, at Le Mans, probably. They've got everything they need there. And what they don't need, of course, is what happened last weekend. So I hope they got the bad news out of the way. Christina Nielsen was involved in an accident early in the qualifying race and did some damage there, but they got that car back out again. It was running well in the latter stages, so you know, if they can keep error free, then they should be super strong.
Yeah, agree. And the Porsche is a good choice. Number 96, just two more cars to go. Turner Motorsport for Bill Oberlin, Robbie Foley, Aidan Reed, and for some reason the fourth driver is a TBD on my entry list here, and I think we know there's a Herter in that car, isn't there?
Is that because Colton Hurt is too fast that you can't actually write down his name? You can't contain him on one piece of paper?
Yeah,
that's got to be it.
Possibly.
This team definitely coming in with the most momentum on their side. They got the pole position in that race. Fantastic effort by Robbie Foley and Bill Oberlin. Aidan Reed, who comes out of Australia, has run in the Asian Le Mans series actually since 2017 in the LMP2 class and LMP3 and GT. He runs in Blancpain GT Asia for another team, which is interesting because that team is owned by Andrea Caldarelli, who drives in Paul Miller Racing's Lamborghini. So there might be a little bit of double guessing what's going on there. Like, don't pass my car, kid, or I'm going to drop you from your full season ride. But yeah, then Colton Herta in the car as well. For Bill Oberlin, though, 33rd start at the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona this year. He has done a few years where he's driven multiple cars, so I counted those multiple cars as multiple starts. But it's just one of those things that you think about it. Bill's only won the race twice. How is that possible? The last time he won the race was in 1998. Aidan Reed was born in 1999. Mm. And Colton in 2000.
Don't. There's no need for that. Final car, last but not least, that we'll talk about as the last entry in the GT Daytona category is a second Aston Martin. This is Tom Furrier's TF Sport. My goodness, what a year they had last year in 2020. They're stepping up to LMP2 racing as well as still running a couple of GTE AM cars in the FIA WEC. They've got Maxwell Root, Charlie Eastwood, Ben Keating and Richard Westbrook comes into that team. You can't keep Westy out of it. That is again, Ben's doing double duty. Generally speaking, Ben keeps the car pointing in the right direction. He's the bronze. He knows what he's got to do. And then hand it over to the other three guys, Jeremy. TF Sport, as I said, great year last year. They'd like to start this year just as well.
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, Charlie Eastwood, he's got a lot of experience now with Aston Martin. For Maxwell Root, you know, it's going to be a fairly steep learning curve for him. He's been used to driving Porsches, so this will be quite different for the 21-year-old. But he was quick in the GT3 Cup over here. Ben Keating, as you say, this is the sixth time he's done double duty in this race, which is kind of cool, isn't it? It'll be his 11th time, 11th year racing here, but 10 plus 5, I kind of have it down, starts in a Rolex 24. And a tricky bit for Ben is to get all the driving in, you know, to complete the minimum drive time duties in two different cars and still let the pros get down to the serious business at the end of the race. Brilliant. Just love it.
Let's move on to GT Le Mans. Only five competitors. This will be the high watermark. We'll see most of these cars in the endurance races for the rest of the season. Six cars, I can't count. My apologies. This will be, the high watermark. Two Corvettes, two BMWs, a Ferrari and a Porsche. I want to start with the Porsche, Jeremy, for no other reason that this is WeatherTech Racing. And Cooper McNeil, we've seen him do this before. He stepped up into a full pro category. He's done it at Le Mans before. He could well have raced in GT Daytona, had the machinery to do that, but is committed to a full season in GT Le Mans. I say good luck to him for that. Certainly last weekend, that gamble, as some people might say, seemed to have paid off because they were third out of the six entries.
Yeah, the BMWs kind of didn't get their strategies right there. But look, the car's fast. It's a proven car. It's one of the GT, the works cars from last year. It's been running in conjunction with Proton Competition, who, of course, run these cars in the World Endurance Championship, have done for years and years and years. And the other drivers there, Richard Leitz, Kevin Estra and Jimmy Bruni, you know, full-on factory drivers.
I think they've got Porsche option numbers on them. You know, when you so I'd like a 911 RSR 19 with the full 21 update kit on, please. And can I have option MO532, MO533 and MO534? That's Estra, Leitz and Bruni. Yeah, we'll have those as well, please. I mean, that's just magnificent.
It's brilliant, isn't it? And you know, and these four drivers, they've got 30 starts in this race between them. So, you know, they've got absolutely what it takes. Cooper, you know, he's a good driver. I mean, he's pretty quick. He's not as quick as the other guys, that's for sure. But it'll be down to the pros to run at the sharp end late on in a race. And Cooper certainly is easily good enough to keep that car into contention. So, it's going to be very interesting to see. Yeah, exactly.
Only silver-rated driver in that category. There is a gold. Everybody else.
Three golds.
One, two. Who's the third gold? Ah, Jesse Cron. How's Jesse Cron only a gold? Conor De Filippi and Gilles Gounon. Okay, fine. Three golds. But here's the only silver. Risi Competizione with the Soul Ferrari 488 GTE. We expect to see them at the Rolex 24 Daytona. Not a disappointment here. And certainly the driving talent here, Shea, not a disappointment. Gilles Gounon, as I mentioned, the only gold among Davide Rigon, Alessandro Pergidi and James Calado, all factory-blessed platinum Ferrari drivers.
Jules ran with Risi twice now at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. They very much like the young Frenchman. He's somebody who has long been associated with Bentley, who actually raced in the Rolex 24 Hours back in 2017 I want to say it was an Audi, a Monoplast Audi, finishing second back then.
You've done that off the top of your head. That's good.
I have. Okay. So I could be wrong. But Jules is somebody who is very much underrated and is somebody who could possibly be faster than the regular Ferrari trio. This is going to be a team that is very familiar. It's lots of the same names and faces. You still have Rick up on the box calling all the strategy and being the engineer, Rick Mayer. But I think the limiting factor, much like Pfaff, is that this car hasn't gotten a lot of miles under its belt since Le Mans. So that's the only thing that concerns me about Risi potentially not winning. Other than that, I think they're going to be top of the class.
Yeah, in terms of pace over a lap, I would agree with you on that. Two BMW Team RLLs, M8 GTEs, Jeremy. 24 is John Edwards, Jesse Cron, Augusto Farfus and Marco Wittmann. And it's Conor De Filippi, Philip Eng, Timo Glock and Bruno Spengler. Nice to see Glock in that car as well. We've got an Eng and Engel. Thank goodness we haven't got Thomas as well. We would be very, and Thomas Enger, we'd be very confused. Sadly, we're only going to see the Rahal Letterman-Lanigan run cars in the long distance races this year. But you know what? As far as this weekend's going, I'll take that for now.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting to me that, you know, Timo Glock has experienced, he is in all sorts of different categories. He's the only driver in GTLM not to have a previous Rolex start under his belt. But yeah, it won't take him long to get up to speed. The BMW Team RLL, they've won this race the last 2 years, and they have every intention, John, of making it three in a row.
Yeah, the good news is that I said we'll only get those cars in the Enduros. It will be July before we get a full non-Enduro race, because we start off with some longer distance races in the way the IMSA calendar is this year. Two Corvettes, what a great start to the C8R era for Corvette last year. 4th of July win was their 100th in North America. And this year, a little bit of a different look to the driver lineup. It's Garcia, Taylor and Katzberg returns with Tommy Milner, Nick Tandy and Alexander Sims in the number 4 car. America's sports car, the world sports car, they would tell us. Number 3 and number 4, what do you think, Shea?
The number 4 comes in the best starting position, having won the pole position. It's 4 poles in 6 years at Daytona for Mr. Nick Tandy. So not a bad start joining in with Corvette Racing. And again, for Alexander Sims, making his debut with the team. So it's going to be a very different looking for Corvette. Tommy Milner not alongside Ollie Gavin for the first time in, well, basically living memory. They've been a driving duo since 2012 when they won the American Le Mans Series Championship. But again, a lot of familiar names and faces. Same goes for the number 3. They won the championship last year, Garcia, Taylor, and Katzberg as their endurance driver. But the one big thing missing from the C8R debut last year, endurance race victories.
Ooh,
they didn't get those. They got the sprint wins, but not the long distance. And as a matter of fact, Corvette actually finished last in manufacturers for the Michelin Endurance Cup. So this is going to be the biggest hole that they need to fill. And of course, I said it's a lot of familiar names and faces. They do have one very big gap on the pit stand. No more Doug Feehan, and we welcome in Laura.
And no Dan Binks either. He left part of the way through the season. A slight change in how the sports car programs from GM are being looked after, and they've been brought under a single umbrella, which bodes very well for the future. And if you're listening to IMSA Midweek Motorsport Special on Wednesday, you will have heard all about that from the new head of that programme. Let's move into Daytona Prototype International as we look at the Rolex 24 2021 for the opener of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship season. And it will be a Cadillac we talk about to start with. And Chip Ganassi Racing are back, Jeremy, with Renger van der Zander, Scott Dixon and Kevin Magnussen. We'd hoped to see Marcus Ericsson in that car as well. Indeed, he was listed originally with that car, but isn't on the entry list for the Rolex weekend.
Yeah, he was entered last weekend just to get some experience in case there was any kind of problems with COVID. He was there as a sort of COVID standby,
if you like it.
That was strategy there. They always intended to run three drivers in this race. They just feel it's a better mix. The drivers are more familiar. They don't sit out for so long. They just think it's the best way to go. And there's a couple other teams that will adopting that same strategy. We'll talk about that in a few moments. But they're going to be strong. Magnussen, steep learning curve for him. The first time he ever drove this Cadillac DPI car was at Sebring, 10 days or so ago, whatever it was. The first time he ever drove it, turned a lap in the wet anywhere in that car, was the opening lap of the race on Sunday.
He did all right.
You might remember.
Yeah.
He went from third on the grid to the lead on the first lap. He'd never driven the car in the wet before. It's quite pretty remarkable performance. Interestingly, though, he was a bit taken by surprise. He was perfectly, he's not under any illusions, let's put it that way. He knows that that race wasn't desperately important, and you know, when it comes down to racing next weekend, there'll be a bit more, it'll be a bit harder than it was on the opening lap this time around. But yeah, what's interesting about that race for that the Chip Ganassi team was that they elected not to make a pit stop when under that caution fairly early in the race.
Yeah.
The reason they didn't come in, everybody else did, was because Kevin just didn't think the track was in good enough shape to switch to dry weather tyres. So when they all came up behind and they're all on six, you're thinking, ah, that's probably not quite so good. So it was a come from behind from there. But look, for him and the team, mission accomplished.
Yes.
That the new format of having this qualifying race was exactly what they needed.
Totally agree.
The car is going to be fast.
Yeah, and as Renger van der Sande told us before Christmas on Midweek Motorsport, Kevin is in a better place than most Formula One drivers would be coming into IMSA, because, of course, he's been to IMSA races. He's watched plenty of them because his dad was racing in them. So he's got an idea of what the competition's going to be like and what the race weekends look like. Scott Dixon jumps into that car as well. He's always been good when he's come into the endurance races. That's a strong trio in the 0-1. Let's go through the rest of the Cadillacs. We've got three manufacturers in the DPI category with Acura and Mazda and Cadillac. We'll go through the other Cadillacs. Mustang Sampling, JDC Miller Motorsports run the 5 car for Tristan Vautier, Loic Duval and Sebastian Bourdais. Again, well, that's a familiar looking lineup with the three Frenchmen. Shea, sorry.
Very much familiar, but the big difference is Duval is the full season driver and Bourdais is just in for the endurance races.
Yeah.
And that does change things, because then your priorities over who gets drive time, who gets practice time, who the car is set up for, that all shifts slightly. And all three of these drivers know what they need to do to try and make the Cadillac as perfect as they can. But in terms of looking ahead, it's a different vantage point for Tristan Vautier in particular. He's come into this race the last few years as the third or perhaps even fourth driver on a car. He's now looking at a full season effort. Best finish of fifth for Tristan came in the last couple of years. Bourdais, well, needs no introduction. 2 wins to his name, but he is looking at the IndyCar season. That is his main priority this year, as opposed to last year when he was looking at getting a full championship here. And Duval looks at his first ever full season in IMSA.
Yeah. And he'll be quick. We know that from his exploits for other manufacturers in prototype racing in the past. He's a very positive influence on teams as well, I hear from people who've raced with him. So that's the number 5 Cadillac. 2 more to talk about. Both effectively, Jeremy, the same team, run by Action Express, the 31-wheeler engineering racing car, and the number 48 Ally Cadillac Racing. A galaxy of stars in both of those cars. I mean, any 4 of those drivers, you would say, oh yeah, fine. But there's 8 of them in there that look exceptionally impressive.
They do, yeah. There's one on, however, who's got a pretty steep learning curve. That would be Chase Elliott, the reigning NASCAR Cup Series champion, of course, 25 years old, son of B. Elliott.
Awesome Bill
from Dawsonville. Mm. But the 25-year-old, you've got to stick Lillicum. He'd never driven this car until the test sessions this week, surprisingly. He hadn't done one of the previous tests. He wasn't available for those. So he's got a pretty steep learning curve ahead of him. But I know the team was impressed with him. His first sort of long run was during a night practice on Saturday, and he could himself very, very well. So, the 2 super strong lineups.
And Action Express have run 2 cars before, Jeremy, so no worries about that. They haven't done it for a while.
Did they run 2 last year? I can't remember now. But they're all geared up to do it. They've got the experience. They've got everything they need. Technical director there is Ian Watt, but there's a lot of extra expertise in there as well, including Chad Knaus, who's on the pit board, because he won most of those championships with Jimmy Johnson. So in the number 48 Ally car. So, It's a very interesting combination. The 48 car, Jimmy Johnson, Simon Pagenaud, Kamui Kobayashi, who's won this race every time he's done it, i.e. twice each of the last 2 years, and Mike Rockefeller. Great to see Rocky back again.
Great.
But, you know, the 48 car, certainly, you know, that's the one that probably needs to do a bit of gelling as well. But, you know, they've done a fair amount of testing in that car. And I think, you know, they certainly feel they're ready to go.
I hadn't realised that Chad Knaus and Jimmy Johnson were reunited. That's very big news, actually. Very big news indeed. Jeremy says Chase Elliott's got a steep learning curve, but with Mike Conway, Pipo Durrani and Felipe Nasr as his teammates, he's got some of the very, very best to learn from. And if he takes Pipo's speed, Mike Conway's nous, and Felipe Nasr's tactical brain, we should be doing all right, shouldn't we?
Yeah, and to be honest, you look at the lineups, and as Jeremy says, you know, steep learning curve. Minimum drive time for the pro classes is 2 hours, so I would expect Chase Elliott to come in, do one, maybe two stints over the course of the race, and then let Mike, Felipe, and Pipo do the rest. Almost as if he's a relief driver. He's coming in to sort of give all three of them an extended break. I view Jimmy Johnson in a similar light, but I think Jimmy is there more for experience and he does want more time behind the wheel. So I could see Jimmy Johnson doing well more than his 2 hour minimum drive time. But when you've got Kamui, Simon and Michael to rely on, you kind of want those three guys in the car all at once for as long as they can.
You might have trouble elbowing them out of the way. Jimmy Johnson has mentioned Le Mans in his not too distant future. So it may well be that he's getting some experience there. Right, we've got two Acuras. No Penske this year, Jeremy. That deal came to an end at the end of 2020. The Penske cars were split between the Wayne Taylor Racing team, who run the Conyngham Minolta Acura, the number 10, and the number 60, Meyershank Racing, with Kerb Agajanian running that car for Dane Cameron, Ollie Plar, Juan Montoya and AJ Allmendinger. We mentioned this at the Raw, but the Ricky Taylor, Philippe Albuquerque, Alexander Rossi and Elio Castro Neves entry from Wayne Taylor Racing, pushing the Raw back was a boon to them, because when they picked up those cars straight after Sebring from the guys at Penske, and they did get them on site, they were pretty much done. They had to be completely rebuilt, and they've had new cars since then, which they may not have been ready for if the Raw wasn't a bit later.
But yeah, that change was announced, you know, well in advance, so they had they had time to get it ready. You know, if they suddenly decided to change it back again and run it on its traditional first weekend of the year, that certainly would have been a problem.
Well, you use all the time you're given, don't you? Yes,
you do. You're absolutely right, Johnny. Exactly right. And you know, this team is, you know, they're super organised. They're well prepared in every conceivable way. You know, and they are coming here with a mindset of, yeah, nothing less than winning. You know, this team has a massive amount of success here in the past, of course, and are hell bent on continuing that here this week.
The other accurate share is the MSR car. You know, Ollie Plar. I love to see Ollie Plar behind the wheel of a car, but you've got Juan Montoya, Dane Cameron and AJ Allmendinger as well in that car. It is going to be, I mean, if they do have a battle for who's fastest in that car, my goodness, that is going to be good to watch.
Yeah, if they have some, you know, we talked about Simon Pagenaud, Mike Rockefeller and Kamui Kobayashi elbowing each other out of the way to get in the car. I think all four of the drivers for the Meyershank Racing Acura will be doing the exact same thing. Juan Pablo Montoya shifts roles from full season into endurance, but still joining Dane Cameron for another round. They've worked very well together over the last few years. They've won a championship together, let's not forget, in this Acura. Olivier Pla knows the strengths of the Mazda very, very well, having been the endurance driver in that car for the last few years. Now, full season effort for Olivier. I'm stoked about that. And he has always been one of Shank's favorite drivers to just keep in the back of his mind. They've won Petit Le Mans together back in 2016 overall. And then you throw AJ into the mix, and AJ is just going to bring fun, but he's also going to bring speed too. It's now been 9 years since AJ's win to the overall for the Rolex. That was his only win in all of his starts at the Rolex. So in terms of teams that are hungry to try and get it done, the 60 is definitely one of those. I don't know if they've had the reliability or the track time so far to be able to get it done, because it seemed like they had some bumps in the road over the course of the Roar.
Okay. Mazda is the final manufacturer. Just one Mazda RTP 24 in the championship this year. I sort of had a thought that we might have two in the endurance races, but that hasn't materialised. Nevertheless, Jeremy, what they have done is combined their drivers to get the very best. One of three cars in the top class that are only running three drivers. But what a threesome this is. Ollie Jarvis, Harry Tinknell and J-Bomb, Jonathan Bomarito. First of all, your thoughts on only announcing and therefore only being allowed to run three drivers?
Yeah, they did that last year as well, as did the number five car last year, the JDC Mustang sampling car. Ganassi doing the same tactic. I think it's a good one. You know, it's familiarity is super important. It's awfully difficult for drivers to come in that don't have experience working with the other guys to plug in. You know, that their sole focus is don't make any mistakes, and that, you know, puts a lot more pressure on you. Jonathan Bomarito, you know, he's a former class winner here in the Rolex 24, so you know, he knows how to get it done. And of course, he's been driving these cars for the last two or three years, so he's lots of experience. He and the two Brits, Jarvis and Tinknell, you know, it's going to be a very, very strong combination. It's a great shame there's only one of the Mazdas this year, no doubt about that. But you know, they had a good result here last year. They know now the cars can run for 24 hours.
Yes.
And the car is always fast. You know, Oliver Jarvis now has had, you know, 2.5 consecutive pole positions here at Daytona. Yes. Because he won the pole each of the last 2 years, and he was quickest for the quickest session.
Legal car.
Exactly, after the other one was thrown out. So you know, it's a very interesting race for Mazda. Quite interested to see how they approach it with just the one car. You don't have the rabbit and the hare like they've had in the past, potentially, but they certainly should be strong.
Yeah, and they've chosen to run the Alpine White rather than the Soul Red, which will also, I think, be slightly disappointing for some Mazda fans. Their works colour effectively has been that dark, beautiful dark Soul Red crystal colour that they've run. I think, you know, we heard Ollie in the Michelin Countdown to Green before the qualifying race saying that nothing less than the championship this year would suffice effectively. And they've earned their chops. Smallest engine in the field of any car, never mind of the DPIs. 2 litre in line four with a turbocharger. The little engine that could. Well, yes, it's the little engine that has, isn't it? But it's going to be tight. I said I wasn't going to ask for any predictions, lady and gentlemen, so I won't. But Jeremy, you have spotted that there is one car in the field that has one particular column where it stands head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah, interesting. The only car in which all the drivers have a Rolex watch already for winning this race is running this weekend, fittingly, the number one car. That's the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini with Madison Snow, Brian Sellers, Corey Lewis and Andrea Caldarelli, who, of course, won this race last year. So, you know, that's something they want to keep going. But it's amazing, really, with that's the only car in the field where all of the drivers have won this race already.
That's a great spot, Jeremy Shea. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. I look at the opening round of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Full coverage of every session on RS2 IMSA Radio. If you check imsaradio.com, scroll down the bottom, the schedule's there. It will auto-convert to your time zone. And for the race itself, of course, if you're in a territory that does not have TV coverage, then we'll also have sound and vision linked perfectly together, also on imsaradio.com with our commentary. Shea and Jeremy will join me, Johnny Palmer, Joe Bradley and Nick Damon as we take you through the whole of the 24 hours across the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and we'll have all of those practice sessions, as I say, before that on RS2 IMSA Radio. It's going to be worth listening and watching too. Looks like an absolute cracker. 49 cars, 5 sets of drivers will win Rolex watches. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye now.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.